Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women.
Hello and welcome to this special limited edition run, which will only be up as long as there's an internet to host it, which will focus on the new remake of, well, not it's remake. It's just a new version.
Yes.
A reinvention, a reboot, let's call it a gritty reboot of the franchise Conan the Barbarian. And we saw it, just a few hours ago.
Just a few beers, margaritas, and a lot of guacamole ago.
Yes, which in dog years is a long time. And yeah, we saw it here in glorious 3D, and it was pretty damn good.
I liked it.
Yes. We both kind of went into it expecting it to suck, I think.
Perhaps we set our expectations way too low.
But maybe not a bad idea.
Hey, Marty.
Yeah?
Who are you?
Oh, that's true. I am Marty, co-host of Flickers from the Cave, here today joined by a guest co-host and a half.
I guess I'm the half.
My co-hosts this episode are...
Olga
and...
KMO.
Who were there right next to me during the glory that was Conan the Barbarian. A lot of you may have seen the 1982 version of this, which was starring our fabulous, and we found out recently, faithful Arnold Schwarzenegger, and directed by the brilliant John Milius, who's given us a lot of great stuff with the most... I was really hoping they were going to use Basil Poliadoris' soundtrack in this, because I still think that's the best music ever. Mm. But they didn't. They had really loud music, but we saw it in a great little digital presentation with a really, really loud sound.
An almost empty theater on a matinee Saturday.
Yes. Cheat, too.
And, wow. So, this film, I mean, first of all, the most important thing, if you're going to reboot the Conan franchise, you've got to cast Conan well. So, we've got Jason Momoa. Mm-hmm. I have never a fan of the Stargate franchise, but I know he was on Stargate Atlantis. He was not particularly buff. I mean, he looked respectable, you know, probably had a personal trainer or something, but he didn't look like Conan, so he put on a lot of muscle to be Conan the Barbarian. And what I realized, I mean, he didn't put on enough to look anything like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but Conan the Barbarian, somebody who lives Conan's lifestyle, is not going to look like a bodybuilder.
No.
No. I mean, he's not going to have every single muscle you can think of developed, because that's just not how life works. This guy rides horses, he swings swords, you know, maybe swims a bit, climbs rocks, but, you know, he doesn't do a lot of pull-ups, probably. He doesn't do many squats.
He's not out there lifting up rocks to the count of 20?
Probably not, no.
No, that's from the Turkish Star Wars, where the guy's picking up rocks and punching them all day.
He's got pneumatic buttocks, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that had to be CGI. the ladies listening will enjoy a certain scene where Mr. Momoa demonstrates the sort of dexterous nature of his buttocks.
Well, let's just jump way ahead and say this is an R-rated film. It's R-rated for lots of violence, a bit of female nudity, and for one really righteous sex scene.
Right. It was righteous. Yeah, we found out that the only thing harder than Sumerian steel was, in fact, Jason Momoa. But
buttocks.
His buttocks. Jesus, yeah.
Presumably. Yeah. His member.
Yeah. I tell you, I don't know how he was laying flat on that table, quite frankly. I was intimidated by his buttocks. So. R-rated in the extreme. Mm. The movie opens, and I think it's safe to say this because it's the opening of the film.
It's a tagline, too, born on the battlefield.
Born on the battlefield, born on the bayou. Mm-hmm. What's the guy's name? John Fogerty to write a song, Born on the Battlefield. That would have been awesome to have that during the credits.
Robert E. Howard's character, Conan,
yeah,
from the original pulp stories, which were then collected into the books, he was born on a battlefield.
Similar to how it's portrayed in this movie?
It's not depicted. It's just stated.
Stated.
He was born on a battlefield.
Okay. Well, I mean, we talked about this briefly before we started recording, but, you know, you've read the books. Mm-hmm. You know, I've maybe read a book, not all of them, read some of the comics. So I'm not anywhere near an authority on what would make it authentic, but this seemed to have a lot of the flavor, at least of what I know in my head as Conan.
It absolutely did. I got the impression that, and okay, I heard an interview with Jason Momoa where he says they were drawing from a lot of different sources, looking back at the original text, looking at the comic books, also looking at the Schwarzenegger film, and there are some nods to it. But yeah, this is not a remake of the 1982 film. When I first saw the teaser trailer that you showed me a few months ago, I thought it looked terrible.
Yeah, it did.
It looked so terrible to me that I wrote this diatribe that I posted online. We can post a link to it. Nothing that I say there is in the least bit valid. This is a good movie. It's cheesy fun. It's not a good movie. You know, it's not important. It's not weighty. It's not thought-provoking. It's just fun. But they really treat it with respect, and I think that a lot of people who had a lot of really good intentions and good feeling for the original material mm-hmm. worked very hard on this film to bring that stuff out for the people who go into it with some background.
A lot of money was spent on this film. You know, we talked about that too. The original teaser trailer made it look really like a sci-fi movie of the week sort of thing. And it's not. I mean, it looks nice. The special effects and stuff are great. The settings, the sets, the costumes, I mean, it's all really nice.
Some of it looked kind of cheap to me. Some of the exterior shots where we see these grand edifices, you know, great big buildings, temples, castles and stuff. I never believed that stuff for a second, but I thought, oh, that's a pretty backdrop.
Yes.
That's nice. That's a nice touch.
This summer, enter the world of the barbarian.
You are no knight. You are not even noble.
I cannot. I live. I love. I slay. And I am content.
What I loved about the story, particularly compared to the first Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan mm-hmm. film, is that they really develop his backstory. You know, in the Conan with Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's a little kid, his village is raided, his parents are killed, he gets taken into slavery, and apparently for 12, 15 years, he just pushes this big wheel around and gets really buff.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, we see that even before his village was raided, one, he was a formidable warrior. We see him kill four of these barbaric, I think they're probably Picts.
Yes, possibly, with their sharpened teeth.
Yes, but in a race where he's supposed to race around the mountain with an egg in his mouth and not break it and, you know, body check his competitors and, you know, get around first, he ends up killing these four guys, cutting off their heads, walking back into the camp, and then he spits out the egg. It's not unbroken, but he was trying.
Right.
You know, rather than running, rather than fighting for his life, he's killing these four guys, and he's a kid still.
Right.
He's
younger than the others.
He's trying to keep the egg unbroken.
I expected him to have that egg unbroken.
I did, too.
And I think that,
well, actually,
I think it's unclear that when he spit it out, it may have broken upon him.
I think that was it. I think it was when it hit the ground it broke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was all ready for him.
And his father, in the Arnold Schwarzenegger version, William Smith, who was in a lot of kind of biker movies and things like that back in the 70s, he played his father and teaches him what the
Secret of Steel.
Secret of Steel. In this movie, Ron Perlman, who is in a lot of things and is great, and most all of them, plays his father. And it is good, and is a big, imposing guy. I think you needed a big, kind of larger-than-life, Odin-looking guy to play Conan's father. But we started talking earlier about the beginning, the very first scene of the movie, where you kind of know what you're in for. And the film opens with Conan's mother being stabbed on a battlefield. And
it opens in the womb.
In the
womb. We see little baby Conan in his mama's womb, and then in comes a sword into the womb and cuts her.
Oh, because she does die.
She dies a few minutes later, but she kills her attacker before.
And she names him before she dies.
Names Conan. And her husband cuts him from her womb. Wow. And presents him to her and says, name your son. She names him Conan and dies.
Which is amazing. But, I mean, shit, when the movie starts and that happens, I mean, it's like, buckle up, guys, here we go. Wow. There is no pretty opening. There is no... There is... We need to talk about it. There is some narration that opens the film.
Ah, yes, okay. So, we get the opening narration, and I turn to Olga and I say, is that Morgan Freeman? And what did you say?
I said, it's always Morgan Freeman.
It's always Morgan Freeman, right. Does not fit. The Morgan Freeman narration does not fit. It seems completely weird.
Mm-hmm.
But there it is. It's brief.
It should have been Ron Perlman. Because Ron Perlman does that kind of shit. I mean, all the Fallout video games, he opens with a whole diatribe about war. You know,
that's, he would have been great.
He's been awesome. Been
like, I am your father,
and it would have made sense. Yeah. That's what they should have had: James Earl Jones as Thulsa Doom,
or Mako.
Well, that's what I mean.
That would have been cool. That would have been the cool connection to the Arnold movies, was to get Mako
do it. Yeah,
yeah, but no.
I think Morgan Freeman has his contract.
If there's voiceovers, he has to do it.
I get first pick of all voice work.
Yeah. I'll do this
some,
one.
There's some blackmailing going on. Morgan Freeman's got everybody's secret.
But yeah, that was... I guess that started me off maybe thinking, yeah, I was right. This is going to suck. But then it immediately launches into, you know, womb-bound Conan and all that. And I mean, I don't know. At that point, I forgot all about the narration.
Mm-hmm.
I was in for it.
So what's important? The character, the Conan.
Okay, we got the look. He looks like Conan.
I thought
he put on too much muscle. I thought his chest was too big. I thought it looked sculpted and, you know, kind of girly, you know, in the way that a bodybuilder can be girly.
So I would disagree with that.
I thought on several occasions when I saw him, like, walk into a scene and his pecs are just round and smooth and shiny, I'm thinking...
But he had chest hair.
Okay. Marvel Comics have given rise to the expectation that anybody who is any sort of action hero is going to look flayed. You know, they're going to have zero body fat, mm-hmm. and they're just going to be muscular all over. And Conan, the character, really owes his existence, his fame in the modern world, to the 1970s Marvel Comics Conan,
mm-hmm.
the Barbarian comic book. If it weren't for that comic book, there never would have been the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. And, you know, if it weren't for the movie, there wouldn't have been anything else after.
Right.
There might have been people who were enthusiastic about the original short stories.
And right.
Probably would have been some sort of fan, you know, something. But really, it all goes back to the comic books, including the expectation that Conan, this guy who rides around and doesn't get regular meals and, you know, is always scrambling in the wilderness and trying to survive, is going to look like he eats 4,000 calories a day and works out enough to put it all into muscle.
But, you know, I mean, he wasn't totally ripped up. I mean, he was a big, strong dude.
I agree. He was believable.
And he had, you know, some hair on his chest. It wasn't like he was shaven smooth. But I didn't have a single problem with his bulkiness. I thought it was a believable, and I was actually thankful that it wasn't like Arnold Schwarzenegger sort of, you know, obviously bodybuilder stuff. I mean, it was impressive in the first movie. I've got no issues with the first movie. but it's much more cartoony. Where this is super cartoony too, but this was at least that character. I thought he had the look perfect.
The Conan of this film is a more interesting character than the Conan of the Arnold Schwarzenegger film.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot more subtlety to him. He's got a lot more going on. He's really charismatic, you know. And the character from the books, from the original Robert E. Howard short stories, is an incredibly charismatic figure. Speaks 12 languages everywhere he goes. The first thing he does is either become the second in command to the leader or kill the leader, you know, in personal combat,
mm-hmm.
trial by combat to see who the leader is going to be. And he always assumes command wherever he is. And this character seemed to have, you know, the Jason Momoa Conan seemed to have that.
Mm-hmm.
He was charismatic, he was kind, he was, you know, brutal, and disturbingly, he liked to kill people. You know, if somebody gave him reason, if they provoked him, then he just got a smile on his face. He's like, oh, okay, well, you've earned this, buddy. Here it comes.
That's kind of the Sumerian way, though. I mean,
well, that's what Ron Perlman was saying at the beginning as Conan's father when he's instructing all the young warriors. He's like, if a Sumerian feels thirst, it is thirst for blood.
Right.
And what was the cold?
If you feel cold, it's the coldness of the steel.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a warrior tribe. You know, it put me in the mind of 300 with the whole Spartan thing, you know, where they're brought up for combat. And they're going to fight harder than anybody else and all that stuff. Clearly, that's the sort of mythos behind the Sumerian, what do they call them, tribes or clans?
Yeah.
When a Sumerian feels thirst, it is the thirst for blood. When he feels cold, it is the cold edge of steel. But the courage of a Sumerian is tempered. He neither fears death nor rushes foolishly to meet it. So to be a Sumerian warrior, you must have both cunning and balance, as well as speed and strength.
But the backstory on this, which is revealed during Morgan Freeman's narration, is that there's this mystical mask that was created by some people long ago.
Made of the bones of kings.
The bones of kings. And
kings with some weird bones.
But not the kings of Leon, because that would have just been super mellow and cool. So this mask made of the bones of kings allows someone to become a god who wears it and has it filled with the blood of a certain family.
Family of necromancers.
Necromancers. Yes. And so that thing is broken up, a la the Rings of Power, and it is distributed throughout the world, each piece given to each of the races or clans to hide so that they would never be joined together again. And to keep
nobody
this...
Nobody thought to throw the freaking thing in the ocean.
Or in Mount Doom or any of that stuff. I mean, come on. And so that's the sort of driving plot behind everything, is this super bad dude played by Stephen Lang, who we found out was the colonel in Avatar with the buzz cut, who has the, I guess, the big final battle with the in Avatar. If you've not seen that, spoiler alert.
there's a big battle at the end of Avatar.
There's a battle. And Stephen Lang's in it. But he's, I thought, excellent, despite what this reviewer we read earlier on IMDb thought.
Very clever review, well written. I enjoyed hearing the review, and I just thought, nope. You're wrong. You're being clever for clever's sake.
I mean, there's stuff that you could pick this movie apart for, or you could just kind of go, hey, let's have some violence and sex and special effects.
It's a mainstream action flick. Does a serious critic really expect it to have any kind of redeeming artistic aesthetic value other than just to entertain you and give you some thrills? You know, you guys are talking about how ripped or he should be or he shouldn't be. I was just happy they had a shirt off.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's got sleeves on, but it's not a shirt. His chest is still in his back, and everything's rippling, and it's all good, and he's fighting, and he's funny. And so for a good-looking guy like that, he had personality,
yeah,
which I was thankful for, because it could have been worse.
There is an artist. He's dead now, but he was a commercial artist, but he was a painter, an excellent painter. A guy named Frank Frazetta, and he did a series of paintings for the paperback Conan collections of short stories. And these redefined the expectation of what Conan would look like. And in these paintings, there's another fantasy artist named Boris Vallejo, who also did some of the covers for those books. And Boris uses models.
It's very different.
He uses models. The poses are all very stiff. He likes to use bodybuilder models. So his Conan is a big bodybuilder, puffy-looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank Frazetta's Conan, while always built like a freaking nightmare, is ropey and hard and scarred all to hell.
Yeah, he's scarred.
And just looks like a monster.
Dangerous.
Dangerous. Viciously dangerous. And
yes.
That is what I want Conan to be.
Yes.
And a Hollywood sensibility can't quite grasp that.
Right.
For somebody to be a badass, they need to have big, puffy gym muscles.
Right.
Conan didn't have big, puffy gym muscles. Jason Momoa does. But he's also scarred up.
Yes.
And he's not super pretty boy.
Yeah.
He's good looking, but not like too... Yeah.
Well, they roughed him up. They didn't like polish him up all nice and shiny, but... I mean, it makes me think of, in Watchmen, you've got the character Rorschach,
Rorschach.
You don't even see his face, but Jesus, he's a scary dude, and he's a little guy, but he is a guy who will rip you apart, and I think that sort of thing, if you had just a little bit bigger guy with his shirt off, that would be a good Conan, that sort of thing. But Conan isn't about, like, I will rip you apart. Conan is about, I'm going to hit you one time, dude, and that's it, because I'm a badass. So I think, you know, you've got to kind of be that physical presence. And the dude just had the look and the stare and stuff. And there were times when it was so much like looking at a Frazetta painting during this movie that it was almost funny, but I was so impressed by it that I wasn't going to laugh.
But he's not a one-note character. He's not just smoky and brooding and snarly. Mm-mm. He can smile. He can laugh. You know, he can play to a room.
Yeah, he has friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not some douchebag. Everybody's like, oh, God, not this guy again. Everybody's like, hey, Conan.
Right on.
Let's get some beers. Or some mead, I think it was. That's what they were drinking. And Conan, he knows how to talk to a woman. Let's just say it, you know.
Oh, let's play the clip.
I don't know where to find the clip.
Oh, it's a theatrical release, of course.
Okay, I'll find something. I'm all right.
You had it
pretty
down pretty well.
No, we were all doing it. I leaned over to Kay during the movie, and I was like, come over here. Stosh, be quiet. She was like, yeah, you can try that. Yeah, this is
it's good for certain times. Yeah. Maybe not others.
So how accurate is his demeanor in regards to women and, you know, in relation to the books?
Okay, the Conan character in depictions of him, he's always atop, you know, a pile of defeated enemies or skulls or fighting some monster, but there's always a scantily clad, very shapely, and in the Frazetta paintings, very buxom and fleshy woman.
Mm-hmm.
Clinging to his leg, or, you know, nearby, waiting to be rescued by him, or screaming as he's fighting the monster or the bad guys. That's just part of the imagery. But in the stories, I don't know, he's.
I mean,
he's
I know there are women
character.
That are strong,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't know if that was more of a.
He's an interesting character. In the famous, super famous painting of Conan on the back of the ape with the red cape. That's an illustration from Rogues in the House. It's a short story called Rogues in the House. And I think that's a story that starts off with Conan going back to the room of this woman who had somehow betrayed him, and he lifts her physically and throws her down into just a filth-filled puddle in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to say, I'm not going to kill you because you're a woman, you're defenseless, but you're contemptible and I freaking hate you and, you know, swim in shit.
Right. Into the mud, scum queen.
Right. But then I think of another story where he and a woman are traveling across the desert, and he's got just a little bit of water left in his water skin. And he says to her...
Is that like a euphemism? His water skin?
No. Okay. It's actually a container for water.
All right.
And he says to her, he puts it to his lips, he says,
canteen.
Drink until I tell you to stop.
Okay.
And so his plan, from the minute he says this, is that while she's drinking, he's going to take out a sword and cut off her head to spare her the long, heinous, painful, lingering death of dehydration in the desert, which he himself will endure because he's giving her the last of the water to distract her. And he's about to cut her head off when he notices something off in the distance. Ah, it's their salvation, and they go off and have their adventure.
Okay.
Huh?
But he's a barbarian, he's a brutal guy, but he does, you know, in his way, treat the women as well as he can.
Okay. Looks out for them, tries to do what he wants to. But, I mean, in this movie, he's very much just like, hey, stay there and do what I tell you to do.
Yeah.
And the woman that he's talking to is she's a monk?
She's a monk, and I think the filmmakers went to great lengths to show that she can take care of herself.
Yeah, she's like a Shaolin monk.
Yeah, she's not this, you know, what's the phrase? The
shirking flower or whatever?
Yes.
Wilting flower?
Yeah.
Shrinking violet.
She is the absolute opposite of all the women in Zombie Flesh Eaters. Who just stand there and scream. Yeah. I mean, she kicks ass.
She totally kicks ass with her little knife.
When her little knife, or when she has no knife.
Or when she gets the big sword on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Right, and she has plenty of times to also be in distress and kind of be, you know, waiting for him. And you know, he doesn't like the clothes that she's wearing once they rescue her. Remember, that's a funny scene.
Well,
she's wearing some kind of gown befitting... A monk who's actually properly birthed, who's got some kind of high righteous blood in her that she does not even wear. So, yes, he's like, you look like a harlot. All the Sumerian women look like warriors, which means an upgrade to a leather corset.
Right.
Yeah.
Nothing says don't mess with me like a leather corset. Well, and the funniest outfits to me were Rose McGowan. And Rose McGowan is the evil daughter of the bad guy. And she is a magician, sorceress, and she's just funky looking. And
she's got her Freddy Krueger claws.
She has Freddy Krueger claws, and she has these thigh-high red stripper boots.
Huge platform boots. She's totally goth.
Yeah, she's totally got it going goth.
Every year, hit it on the nose.
Shaved eyebrows.
Yeah. And the shaved and like a receding hairline.
Yeah, shaved
markings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very freaky looking, and I don't know. But and she just wasn't very good, I didn't think. I thought she was kind of wooden and goofy, but...
Yeah. I don't know if I'm ready to blame Rose McGowan for that. It might just be a...
I typically like her, so yeah. I mean, I'm not saying she's bad. I just didn't think that character was good, let's say.
Yeah. The filmmakers went way out of their way to make her contemptible, so we are looking forward to her eventual comeuppance.
Yes.
Yes.
And maybe it happens, maybe not.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Maybe it happens. Maybe it happens.
But there are bad guys, there are good guys, and, you know, clashes occur.
You know, a change that I noticed, and I think this is entirely due to CGI,
mm-hmm.
is that in battles in the past, even in the 82 Conan film, you might have people battling on horseback.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always people hitting people, humans hitting humans, humans doing something to humans. Horses might fall down, but then they get up again and they roll away. And in this, we get violence against horses.
Yeah.
Yes.
We get horses getting knocked in the head. We get horses getting stabbed. Horses getting their legs broken.
Yeah, it was
the
scary.
Horses get messed up in this film. And yes. I think it's because we all realize now that, you know, if that happens, obviously it's CGI.
Sure.
Even if the whole film's filmed in Bulgaria, and who knows what they do in Bulgaria, the horses are making movies.
Hey, horse life is cheap in Bulgaria. No, the thing where the guy hits the horse in the head with a hammer,
yeah,
I think that might have just been acting on the horse's part, because the horse just moved his head. They could have overwound that, and they could have just pulled the horse's head with a rope or something, said, over here, horse, and the horse did that, and the guy swung the hammer and made it look like that. That was friggin' awesome. I mean,
I heard the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
On Fresh Air, being interviewed by Terry Gross, talking about
True Grit.
True Grit,
yeah.
Right. And the scene where Rooster Cogburn is driving Little Blackie on over and over, trying to get him, you know, to take the girl to help. And he would stab him in the flank and rub salt in the wound and all this. And they were talking about how the horse was absolutely fine through all this. This is just all movie magic, you know.
That was an amazing scene right there. I was weeping openly during that whole thing. Like, no, no, no. Oh, my God. But, yeah, there, you don't so much weep for the horses in this, but it was shocking. The one really toothy bad guy, when he swings down underneath the horse and slices its throat.
Yeah.
During the chase, like on the run. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. Yeah, it's good stuff. Full of amazing stunt work. I mean, the list of stuntmen was what? 100 people? I mean, it was...
I didn't count, but yes.
But it was a long list of stunt people. And yes, the most Bulgarian list of names I've ever seen, apparently.
Funny looking.
I thought one of the most appealing things about the movie, the sword fighting, was badass.
I wanted to make him a samurai. I wanted to be a barbaric samurai. I wanted to have that certain amount of grace. I wanted to fight reverse grip at the whole time with my father. So that's like an homage to Zatoichi, which is like old samurai movies. And it's just little things here and there that just because I'm a geek to samurai movies. And...
I was thinking as I was watching the film that this film was simultaneously a bigger film and a smaller film than the 82 Conan the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about Conan the Destroyer, contemptible at every level, just a sellout at every level.
Right. Cash in is what that was, yeah.
The 82 film, super classic, and it was a huge film in that it covered the whole life of the character, pretty much. I mean, here is, you know, what made him, which gave him his rage in his youth, his family being killed. He tracks the one person responsible down and delivers justice, and that's it. And in the process, he meets this woman who, you know, he loves so much that they make a vow that if either should fall in battle first, the other will come back from hell and fight by their side. All of this packed into one film. The film with Jason Momoa, it seemed like there was a much larger story to sample from, but we're still only telling a little part of it. It really felt like a James Bond film for me. It's like, just, ooh, this is the new Bond.
Yeah.
this is the first adventure, but we can see there's a big cast of characters. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different places to come back and revisit this, and it really seemed like this is the first installment.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think they would love to have that be the case, to have, you know, in 2 years another one of these.
Yeah, and I was really hoping that the next time they came around, I have nothing against this director, but I was really hoping they could get, you know, a real A-list director to come back and really revisit this.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot, obviously, to this that someone with some chops could do. And I'm not a fan of Marcus Nespel, the director. Although this was my favorite thing, I think, that I've seen him do. And I could look it up and see what else he's done. But I know that he did Pathfinder, which was, you know, the same basic idea. The thing to me about the original Schwarzenegger film, though, is that it is such an archetypal story. I mean, it is operating on a certain level. The whole thing with his mother being murdered right in front of him, and then this life of slavery, and then the escape and the hunt for this guy, and that journey that Conan goes on in that movie is much more. It's much more epic.
Mm-hmm. That's why I say it's a bigger film.
It is a bigger epic arc in that storyline. But this movie was like all flashy and great and loud and violent and
a lot more locations, bigger sets, and a lot more green. Well, there was no green screen work, no blue screen work in the first one. It's all shot on location.
Right.
A lot of this was shot in front of a blank screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, but the story itself, the story underlying it all, was much more of just an adventure story, mm-hmm. where the original Conan was a very archetypal, like,
revenge
sort of
picture.
It was a thing about a guy who, you know, gets vengeance, on a person who did a bad thing, but he does it in a very Conan way. I mean, the final scene where he's up behind Tulsa Doom, and he's just hacking and hacking and hacking.
With the broken sword.
With the broken sword, chopping his head off with his father's broken sword. You know, I mean, that's a big deal. And it's powerful.
As we've discussed it, there is a lot of reference to the 82 film in this, because...
Yeah, the sword's the exact same.
The sword is the same, the whole revenge aspect of it is the same, mm-hmm. because that is completely lacking from the original material.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Utterly lacking.
Okay. Yeah.
And the bit about the Secret of Steel, that's also mostly from the 82 film.
Okay.
But just so much of the costuming, so much of the just the little tiny references, names of places. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just have the fully fleshed out Hyborian Age world of Robert E. Howard to draw upon, mm-hmm. and they don't make a big deal about it. It's just the setting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's cities you go to that they say, the City of Thieves. You know, mm-hmm. doesn't they say the city?
Which occurred to me, you can't really have a City of Thieves. Who are they going to steal from? Each other? You know? Do they go out into the world and raid and then come back here to the City of Thieves?
I think it's kind of like Mos Eisley in Star Wars. You know, it's a den of iniquity.
It's where they live, and they know they can't be bothered, and they can...
It's a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Exactly. Right. I mean, you've got a place where they go, where they can go and spend their ill-gotten gain, you know, and not be hassled.
Den of iniquity, yeah.
Exactly. Get you some Black Lotus. Stygian.
Anybody that's not like that has to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the, what in the first one, in the Schwarzenegger Conan, there's the thing where he's eating like the lizard on a stick. Mm-hmm. You know, that's awesome. But no.
Well, they go to buy some Black Lotus, though.
Yeah.
And I wish I could remember his name. The surfer guy, who is his Hyrcanian thief and archer buddy, Subukai.
Subukai.
Yeah, I don't remember the actor's name.
Die, Stygian dog.
I think it's something Lopez. You're looking it up.
Dog.
I'm backing up from Conan 2011 to Conan 1982.
But he says to the guy who's selling them the Black Lotus, he says, well, this isn't Ophel, is it? He says, would I sell Ophel to a slayer such as you? And then they're walking away.
Jerry Lopez,
yes. And they're chewing on their Black Lotus, and Jerry Lopez's character says, chew slowly, this is the good stuff.
There's so much great stuff in that, and it's turning into a 1982 Conan talk, but the stuff where he's in the pit, and he's fighting, mm-hmm. and he puts like claws or something on his hands, right? And he's kind of mm-hmm. strapping them on, and there's all this ritual to that thing, and that... crowds are chanting, and it's just, it's good stuff. Mm. Makes me want to watch it right now. And I've got in my garage a giant stack of Conan comics.
I know you do.
So we could look at some of those. We'll do a reading from Marvel's Conan the Barbarian episode issue 135.
Although I understand now that the really, you know, legitimate Conan comics that are appearing are from Dark Horse. In fact, an interview I saw with Jason Momoa referenced the Dark Horse comics.
Okay. Maybe they're sticking to the source material. I love the comics because they had a lot of monsters and dinosaurs and giant snakes and, you know, lost worlds and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was a nice thing to me as a kid. I really enjoyed that. I mean, I'd love to see a cartoon. I mean, why not do that? We've got Fire and Ice, you know. Why don't we just take some of those visuals and do them now? Put it on Cartoon Network at midnight. That'd be violent as hell. Have you seen Korgoth the Barbarian?
No. I've seen Thunder of the Barbarian.
Yeah, I have that.
His mighty sun sword.
We might need to watch Korgoth the Barbarian right after this, because it is a total Conan send-up. If you haven't seen it, Korgoth, K-O-R-G-O-T-H, the Barbarian. It was only one thing, a pilot, that never, I guess, got picked up or made into a series, but super brilliant. Check it out. Very violent, very bloody, very demented.
The great cities have risen and fallen. Civilization's grip on mankind has grown weak and arthritic. Dark forces seek to renew forgotten covenants. And primordial beasts reclaim the wilderness. Out of the frozen north, a man emerges. A man of a barbaric age, whose merciless savagery may be the only key to his survival. They call him Korgoth.
Olga, anything else you want to say about Conan the Barbarian?
Well, I don't usually go see movies like this, so it was really, really enjoyable. I felt like I let myself out of the cage.
It's like junk food.
Yeah, totally. I was ready to have more. The fight scenes were great, the sex scene was great, the hot dude on the screen was great. Not too many women interfering with the action.
But what women there are mostly bare-breasted, so.
Lots.
Yeah,
the ones that were acting weren't.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, the ones that acting weren't.
That was more the set dressing.
The parties, which are bare-breasted women, were fine. Wenches. Kind of used to parties like that.
That's true. In the credits, there was a whole section that was...
Wenches.
Topless wenches.
Topless wenches, which should have been bare-breasted wenches.
Yeah, no, I enjoy. You know, the action goes by so fast, the head splattering and all of that. Or am I getting that mixed up with the zombie movies? I'm not sure.
But, no, there was some head splattering.
Yeah, I mean, it goes by so fast. And then sometimes I felt like with the 3D glasses, it was a little blurry in spots. I didn't quite get it. So a lot of stuff just you know, it's just going by. And you're just kind of like, yeah, okay, sure.
It still makes more sense than Michael Bay.
There's a lot of suspension.
Of disbelief?
Yeah, well, all kinds of other things, yeah.
Yes. Many things were suspended.
Many things were suspended and dropped.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it, and like the usual irritating propaganda type of stuff was minimal.
Yeah, I say go to this movie with low expectations.
Except we've set it up now.
But we've set it up.
Disappointment.
We've clearly though stated that our expectations were low.
Yes.
We went into this thing expecting it to. I did. I went in expecting it to suck, and it did not.
I didn't expect anything except like, oh, a mainstream movie probably will suck. And yeah, it did not.
Yeah. So, go see it if you want.
And if you don't want?
Don't. Go watch the Schwarzenegger one. It's awesome.
If you don't want, come back and listen to another review.
Yeah, because we'll come back. We'll talk about something else.
Crom, I've never prayed you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we were good men or bad. Why we fought or why we died. No. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Valor pleases you, Crom. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge. If you do not listen, then the hell with you.
So that was episode special episode number one, we'll call it. Because this is the first of hopefully a long series of special one-off episodes of Flickers from the Cave. You can find KMO and I both over on the Z-Realm podcast, where we focus on zombies exclusively. And you'll find us, you'll find me here with my regular co-host Mike soon on another episode of Flickers from the Cave. So until the next time that we all meet here, well, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Until next we meet.
Yes.
Cross your enemies. See them driven before you.
And hear,
The lamentation of the women.
Excellent.
Contemplate this on the tree of woe.